we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Birmingham Post, read by Peter Donaldson.
Hugh O'Neill of Cheltenham was forgiven for being 2 hours late for court yesterday because police who had searched his home had taken away his alarm clock.
Well, thank you, David Kay of Rugby, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Would you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and John Wells. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Roy Hattersley. Before we start round one, here's an update from the divorces column of the Derby Express.
A decree nisi was granted in the following case at Derby Divorce Court. Mr. P.J. Jones, H.M. Prison, Sudbury, versus Mrs. M. Jones, H.M. Prison, Ascombe Grange. After 2 years' separation... by consent.
Well, thank you, Mrs. G. Harrop of Derby, for sending us that. Richard, your first question. Which president is now the Pitts?
This is a reference to President Scargill, I think.
Wrong.
No.
Well, let's start again. You ask the question and then Dickie will give you the answer.
The man who dubbed himself president.
Major.
No, you...
It's quite extraordinary when you think they were at school together, isn't it?
It's about tied for ignorance, I would say that.
It's all to do with the president of the Mine Workers Union.
Yes. It is not. Oh. Correctly, it is Mr. Hattersley who...
The self-styled president of the Board of Trade.
Thank you.
Mr. Michael Heseltine, old Salopian, friend of all those who went to that school, but forgotten by them now.
I think... listeners should be told what Old Salopian means. It is a reference to Shrewsbury
Not, School. Not completely what it means, I trust. I'm a family program.
The only thing I have in common with Mr. Heseltine, we both went to the same school. Not at the same time, I hasten to.
And they don't go to the same hairdresser, oddly enough.
I think Mr. Heseltine's rather older than me, isn't he?
No, Ducky. Much, much younger.
Oh dear.
It's all to do with Heseltine.
This is all about Michael Heseltine and his contribution to National Help Get Shot of John Major Week, to be followed soon by National Make Way for Me Week. That's the planned closure by the President and Board of Trade of two-thirds of Britain's coal mines with a loss of 30,000 jobs, which has amazed even Tory backbenchers. They had no idea there were so many jobs left to lose. This follows Michael Heseltine's recent promise that to preserve British industry, he would intervene before lunch, before tea, and before dinner. Mines the industry you can shut down between meals without spoiling your appetite. John, your question now. Where did the dirty half-dozen make a debatable contribution?
Well, this was a very peculiar story, if it's the ones I'm thinking of. A lot of schoolboys, underage schoolboys, who have been on the rampage in Newcastle or somewhere.
No.
And they are called the Dirty Half Dozen, and they do these incredible thefts, removing various bank buildings and things, but they can't get them because they're too young, you see. Look in your newspaper if you don't believe me.
Yes, well, it's not the answer.
Sorry.
It's all these lunatic Americans.
That's right.
Quails and gold.
Yeah, but there was only three of them. What do you mean six?
Yeah, there are six. They had two debates.
Yes,
not that you'd notice.
Well, yes, but I think I come back to my schoolboys in Newcastle, who are underage and known as the Dirty Half Dozen. It was in the Independent newspaper.
The Birmingham Six.
Yes.
Well, any Newcastle, any underage schoolboy who stood for president would probably get in, even if he were from Newcastle.
It may interest Hattersley to know that the next president, President Clinton, was at my old Oxford College.
He's much younger than you, Dickie, isn't he?
I don't know. I don't remember him very well.
Don't worry, he'll feel just the same about you.
Alan is absolutely right. This was the American TV miniseries Worst Among Equals, in which George Bush and Bill Clinton battled eye to eye and little Ross Perot battled eye to knee. The following day, Vice President Dan, read my slips, Quayle, faced Clinton's Al Gore, one of Perot's golfing chums, who simply introduced himself with, "Who am I and why am I here?" a political masterstroke, as viewers were instantly reminded of Ronald Reagan in a sudden burst of lucidity. Roy, who will be making tracks for Kuwait?
Oh, that's the failure of the Vickers Company to sell their tanks when the Americans have sold them, when we all know that our tanks are better than the Americans, but the Americans have just got it because of political lobbying and that sort of thing that foreigners were always doing to our disadvantage.
That's right. Absolutely right. The White House denied this was a cynical attempt to buy election votes. It was simply to help preserve democracy for the Kuwaitis, so that they can buy election votes. The chances for the British tank weren't improved when its control system went haywire during a demonstration, spun around and pointed its big gun at the Kuwaiti customers. The shouts of, "Be careful, you could have someone's eye out with that." Alan, here's a piece of music for you. Well, that was Money's Too Tight to Mention by Simply Red. And the question is, who survived a grilling without a roasting?
Well, someone's been asked about Money.
It's about Norm.
Really? I thought we'd done the political one. I always get Madonna at this end of it. I've got a new book out and split the Booker Prize, I understood this. Well, I suppose. I mean, I really didn't think it was going to be as dull as that, because I'm usually given a platform that I can elaborate with the odd joke. But the oddest joke is Norman Lamont, and you can't get funnier than that. He came before a House of Commons committee, and with 38 bounds, he was free. But we'll get him. We'll head him off at the pass. He will not last the night.
Well, that wasn't bad for an answer.
Thank you very much. I'll take condescension if there's nothing else available.
An answer like that, that's all you're going to get, I'll tell you. You're absolutely right, Alan. It is Norman Lamont, the well-known Halloween lantern lookalike. And his appearance before the Treasury Select Committee, facing up to his McCarthy-like inquisitors, "Are you now, have you ever been an economist?" Norman stoutly refused to reveal the names of any of his policies. Indeed, the ex-chancellor-to-be put on a sterling performance, totally worthless, and no one bought it. And the scores at the end of round one are hardly surprising, really, because Richard Ingram and John Wells have amassed one.
Get one from.
And Alan and Roy are six. We start round two with an item from the Daily Telegraph.
The Royal Navy is investigating an incident in which a wren was discovered allegedly having sex with a sailor in a corridor of their ship. "What they do as boyfriend and girlfriend on shore is nothing to do with us," said a Navy spokesman. "But everyone knows the disciplinary position."
Well, thanks to all of you who sent that one in. Richard, your question again. Which boy in blue saw red over the bourgeoisie?
I notice that the answer to everyone is Norman nowadays.
Except this one.
Is it Inspector, the Chief Knacker, Mr. Imbert?
Mr. Imbert is right.
Yes. In the summer months, the Home Secretary, Mr. Kenneth Clark, made some reference to the fact that the middle classes were all getting disillusioned with the police force. And last week, the head of the police, Mr. Imbert, lashed out at the middle classes and said they were all for the police stopping their houses being burgled, but they broke the law in all kinds of other ways, like driving too fast on the motorway.
That's a very good and amusing answer.
Thank you, John.
Deeply accurate, and worth a round of applause, I think. And, John, it's your turn now. Who aren't daft enough to keep taking the tablets?
The cabinet? Is it?
No, I know. This is to do with a firm which is called Larkhall Products, and they've been making some stuff called Something IQ, which they persuaded children that if they took these vitamin tablets, they would leap with one bound to the top of the class. And Larkhall Limited have had to withdraw their things.
Curious enough, it all blew up at Shrewsbury Magistrates Court. which ruled that a drug company was wrong to claim that their vitamin pills could help improve children's IQs. Company chairman Robert Woodward genuinely believed his marketing blurb, as does his three-year-old daughter Tracy Woodward, emeritus professor at King's College, Cambridge. Dr. Woodward is now working on a new product, intelligence pills, to improve the intelligence of parents who think their kids' intelligence can be improved by taking intelligence pills. Roy, have a listen to this. Every day I write a book, sang Elvis Costello there. Your question is, where did drawing books add a bit of competitive colour?
This is the Booker Prize, in which the judges chickened out and decided they couldn't give the award to one person, but divided it between two.
Absolutely right. It was the grand Booker Prize draw, a bit like the Reader's Digest Prize draw, except you actually get to hear who the winners are. This year there were two. This year there were two. Michael Ondaatje, is that right?
Ondaatje.
Ondaatje. Michael Ondaatje.
It was a great success as promotion, this prize.
Michael Ondaatje and Barry Unsworth. After a full 90 minutes, the five judges were split 50-50. Pity about the one in the middle. And when the result was announced before the dinner of assembled literary geniuses, there wasn't a dry glass in the house. I wonder if a certain well-known playwright was there. However, passing swiftly on, we come to Alan and your question. In 1992, whose reputation was black and blue?
Well, I suppose because it was Columbus Day last Tuesday.
Right.
And it has really been very funny. It was going to put all sorts of people on Easy Street, and they made films and did records and T-shirts. And they didn't know about political rectitude. It now turns out that Christopher Columbus was responsible for everything. And traffic jams in downtown Detroit. Scrofula in Kansas, probably for the American election. The whole thing has gone wrong. I mean, it was supposed to be about discovering paradise and making it better. But he now turns out to be this Simon Legree Adolf Hitler figure who got off this boat and subjected everybody to nasty things and gave them all syphilis and then came home again.
So it is about American celebration of the day 500 years ago when Columbus uttered those immortal words, "It's great to be here in Japan. Do you accept travelers' checks?" And at San Francisco's Columbus Day Parade, a float carrying a man dressed as the explorer was attacked by an egg-hurling mob chanting, "Mass murdering pig." Whatever happened to ticker tape before? Scores at the end of the second round have changed somewhat because Richard and John have pulled their socks up in a five, but Alan and Roy are still well in the lead with 10. We start round three with a story from the Southport, Ormskirk and Formby Star.
A woman broke her husband's arm in two places after she thought he was having an electric shock. She came home from work to find her husband frantically shaking and vibrating in the kitchen with what looked like a wire running from his waist towards the electric kettle. Quick as a flash, she picked up a weighty piece of wood from behind the kitchen door and smashed it into her husband to try and jolt him away from the deadly current. However, the man was only having a jig whilst listening to his Walkman.
When I first said that, I thought he said milkman. However, thank you, Carol Heaton of Tarleton, for sending us that. Richard, what material girl isn't wearing any material?
This is that awful singer, isn't it? Who was in The Observer. I'm sorry to say she was in The Observer. This Madonna person.
Yes.
I don't think we should give her any more publicity at all. I think we should talk about Roy.
Yes.
It's a make or break for Madonna's career, whether she's mentioned on the news quiz, yeah. You know? I think you've taken a brave stand there, Richard. Posterity will thank you.
Any time I've got applause from the audience.
I have to tell you, I spent September in Tuscany, and I went from church to church, and none of the pictures looked like her at all.
She flew into Britain to promote Sex, her hardcore hardback, which narrowly missed winning this year's Dirty Booker Prize. On leaving the airport, Madonna was involved in further controversy when a consignment of her conical bras fell out of the boot of the limousine, landed points up, and started a four-mile contraflow. Eight of the M1. But a change of pace now as he asked John to listen to this piece of music.
Life can be sweet on a sunshine street like ours. Life is sweet on a sunshine street like ours.
The question is, whose word on the street is all white on the night?
This is to do with the late John Betjeman's favourite programme, Coronation Street, at which something like the Race Relations Board or Demographic
Rees
Institute...
Rees-Mogg?
Yes. Well, this funny double-barrelled fellow, who I believe is an immigrant...
Oh, yes, very, very good man,
Rees-Mogg. This Rasta fellow, Rees-Mogg... apparently said that there aren't enough representational people like him on Coronation Street.
No gays in Coronation Street. Why don't you
go on? I don't know. You can never tell. Anyway, so that's roughly speaking that Rastamog does not like the general racial or sexual mix on Coronation Street and would prefer it to be altogether a little gayer, as Richard says, and more colourful.
You know, Rees-Mogg says he doesn't like Coronation Street because it's not about up-to-date things. His favourite programme is Hello, Hello.
The war's still on, which is why he always wears that demob suit with a big stripe.
Anyway, let's pass on swiftly to your question, Roy. What air is all ears to what's on air?
Oh, this is the sainted Prince of Wales,
yes.
Whose physical characteristic need not detain us, but who listens to Radio 4 and, like all decent people, wants to save it from the ravages of the BBC. And I think people should write in now. Write in now, addressing your letters, etc., etc., etc.
You're quite right, Roy. This is Radio 4 fan Prince Charles. Good day, Your Highness. Who joined the campaign to protect Britain's long wave heritage from non-stop current affairs. The Prince is worried 24 hours information will mean much binding in the marsh being replaced by much padding in the news. Alan, whose bad reputation was uncemented after his case was heard in camera?
I hope I was going... Now that the news quiz has actually saved the monarchy and seen off that fearful American slapper, I was hoping for a question that would do the same for this. Cemented. This is concrete. It's not one of those about JCBs being bricked up in walls.
It's a sort of a scam by a television group.
This is an extremely generous clue.
It's a lawsuit, isn't it?
It's so surprising to see Alan stump.
You know, the answer is worried about the legal implications of giving it.
Yeah, it's the ITV case.
Absolutely.
No, I don't think we can mention that.
No.
Did you hear the lunchtime news?
No.
Well, you better find me another question.
All right.
I'll wait.
How many fingers am I holding up? Quite right, 2 points. No.
This is almost mysterious.
It's the plumber who won £5,000 damages against Thames Television after a programme wrongly portrayed him as a cowboy doing unnecessary work and overcharging pensioners.
Yeah. Thames Television have, however, appealed.
Yes.
Well, that's all right.
So I won't go on, as it's still sub judice.
No, it isn't sub judice at all. I speak as an expert in these matters.
Thank God, an expert in something. Come on. Out with it.
Well, I do have some experience of libel, and I can say that it is not sub judice, and you can make any jokes you wish about it.
And I don't want to make any. I want to tell you the scores at the end of this round, which are... Richard and John, 9, but Alan and Roy still in the lead with 14. Before we start the final round, here's an item from Yorkshire on Sunday.
The woman of the caring 90s combines a successful career with a happy family life.
Leslie Woodward, who has been nursing for 18 years, is a breast care sister and has a young family. Her ability to juggle them both has won her a top prize.
Thank you, W.M. Maddox of Sheffield, for that one. Richard, will you have a listen to this?
Rees-Mogg sings.
Richard, the song was called Panama by Mandrill, and the question is, who disappeared in a Panama hat trick?
Panama hat trick?
If it had been Alan Corran, you'd have got a clue, probably. Do you know? He'd give you a clue, he'd tell you what the question was about. Yeah. He's not going to, is he?
It's involving Panama.
Yes, that's not what he's doing, is it?
There you go, Panama, yes.
I think I should pass to Alan.
Would you like to hold up some more fingers? I think this one's subjudicially as well. Nothing about Panama this week.
Yes, there is.
Roy.
Well, I know it, but whether I should humiliate the others by giving the answer, I'm not sure.
Do anybody know
well, I know the answer, but I know that we will be arrested on leaving the studio. Come on, John.
There's nothing illegal in this at all.
No, well, Alan says he's going to be arrested if he mentions this plumber. So I think it's very likely I'll be arrested if I mention this Panamanian hat-trick creator.
This story's all about Essex pensioner Alf Wybro, who booked a flight to Panama City, Florida, only to end up 2,000 miles away in Panama, Central America.
Very easy mistake, I thought. Very stupid thing to call somewhere in Florida.
Alf Wybro was there for 3 hours before realising why his daughter hadn't gone to pick him up. He was in the wrong country, and she'd gone to Quebec to collect his luggage. In his defence, Alf Where Now Wybrow said, I thought the airport had grown since the last time I was there. Alf's nightmare ended when the airline realised their mistake and flew him first class back to Braintree. You know, the town on the outskirts of Reykjavik. John, this is going to be more difficult for me to say than for you to answer. Who nicked the Nick's anti-Nick knick-knack?
I suppose this is Argo for prison, is it?
No.
Oh.
It's the anti-Nick knick-knack is the essence of the thing.
I see. Well,
in other words, a device.
A device, yes, for getting in and out of prison.
No. In and out of motor cars.
Oh, yes. Well, alas, legal considerations don't allow me to answer. I'm very interested in hearing what Mr. Hattie is going to risk his
liberty. White Ford Sierra.
Yes, we'll say it together. It's the town of Newcastle.
You remember Flanagan and Allen?
That's right. I thought Laurel and Hardy, but I'm not going to say which.
Who's going to get
you two, it's Hardy
mess.
And Hardy, come on.
it's about his area.
No, it's not.
It's about Northumbria.
He thinks anywhere north of what?
Anyway. Well, it's somewhere beyond Hendon.
The thief gets into it, the doors lock,
yes.
The police arrive,
yes.
Only the doors didn't and the police weren't there, so the thief drove off.
Yes. Exactly right. Well played, yes. Fascinating story, and you got it exactly right. It's the Rat Trap police car, which was stolen despite being fitted with the very latest in crime-busting technology, a device designed to stop the car with the thief trapped inside after 20 yards. Northumbria police officers were keeping watch as the unsaleable, or British-made Ford Sierra, was driven away from a notorious crime black spot where it had been locked and parked with a bag marked swag on the back seat and a sun strip which read Thief 1 and Thief 2. The new owner must be feeling pretty smug. After all, he's avoided a prison sentence. All he's got to do now is get out of the car. Roy, you did so well on that one. Here's your own question. Who gave a cliffhanging twist to a ripping yarn?
Cliffhanging twist to a ripping yarn.
Sir.
I think you're on your own here.
Yes, I think, I've been deserted by my partner.
Well, there was this cove, it's in the Independent, this one, as opposed to the Sun or Today, where you get your other questions from, which was about a lecturer who turned up at some boys' school to tell the boys about his wonderful adventures he'd had under ripping yarns, and they said, you go and wear for a walk, come back and give us a lecture in 15 minutes. And after about 4 hours, they got worried And they found him hanging upside down on a cliff, and the really bizarre twist was that he refused to be rescued because he liked it on the cliff. He obviously did a bit of a nutter. And after they got out, I think they spent most of the budget for the county defence had been out with helicopters looking for him. So you see, it was a very amusing yarn of the type that you like on this
programme.
Very
good. I think that deserves applause for that.
Yes.
It's Alistair Ems who arrived at the school in Devon to deliver a ripping yarns lecture on how to survive in the wild, then proceeded to give a practical demonstration by falling over a cliff top. Initially, there was some confusion as to whether an alarm should be raised, as many staff thought he was already in the lecture theatre demonstrating camouflage techniques. In best boy's own spirit, many pupils joined in the hunt, after first remembering to count to 100 to give him a jolly good sporting chance. Ems was eventually found on a cliff ledge, living off the land, although judging by his performance, it's a safer bet than living off the lecture circuit. Alan, who got a ticking off after toying with a cheque?
Dean Collins, little swine who's managed to get his hands on his father's chequebook. And he also got one of those things that come through the mail that are called things like inventions. And you can get a mountain bike that you put over your ears and it plays, lady, plays squidgy music to you all day. I mean, all those very silly things nobody wants, like slimmers and non-stick lavatory mats. And he sent off for all these things, and it was £93 and something, and he forged his father's name on a cheque.
Well answered. Lovely. Well played. And before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, have you brought a cutting for us?
I've been sent a cutting from the Groniad. It says, Jonas Savimbi, the former UNITA guerrilla leader, launched his election campaign in Angola with the slogan, New Trousers in September.
John, what have you brought?
This comes from something called the Sunday Mail, about an elderly visitor at the Milky Way Falconry Centre at Clovelly in Devon, who was left red in the face when he realised that a falcon, mistaking his wig for a furry animal, had taken it to its perch to eat.
Turn to Roy now.
This is from the Dudley News and County Express. A ice cream delivery man drove to a motorway service station and drank himself unconscious in a suicide bid after his relationship with his girlfriend went sour. He later told the court, I really meant to do it, but in the end, I just didn't have the bottle.
Fine. Alan?
Bit of fun from the South Carolina Daily Star. Convicted murderer Michael Godwin, 28, sentenced to go to the electric chair in Columbia, South Carolina, had a narrow escape when his sentence was commuted to life on appeal. But yesterday, while sitting naked on the metal commode in his cell, he bit through a wire while mending the headphones on his radio and electrocuted himself.
Thank you. Let's look at the final score. Unsurprisingly, really, but Richard and John done quite well. They pulled themselves up to 10, but Alan and Roy are this week's winners, of course, with 17. Well played. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Arab News, sent in by Graham Waller of Epsom.
We are unable to announce the weather, as we depend on weather reports from the airport, which is closed due to the weather. Whether we will be able to give you the weather tomorrow will depend on the weather.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, John Wells and Roy Hattersley. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Colin Swash.